Ricochet effect, ricochet effect. This is Dr. Obini El-Amin with the Ricochet Effect. I am joined with Dr. Valerie Yerger. She's a founding member of the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council. The overarching goal of Dr. Yerger's work is to frame the disproportionate burden of tobacco among marginalized communities as a social injustice and to inform public health policies so they effectively reach these communities. Greetings, Dr. Yerger. Thank you so much for being in studio with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Dr. Obini.
What is the role that trusted institutions like the media, community-based organizations, or leadership groups, what role have they played in either resisting or enabling the harm of tobacco products in the African American community?
Well, one of the reasons I really am in this movement is because of the early research that I did in 2002. I published a paper called Smoking with the Enemy. And in that paper, using the tobacco documents as my entire source of data, I documented how the tobacco companies had a relationship with just about every major Black organization by either sponsoring events, giving them money, helping to pay rents for their business offices, and whatever way that they could form a relationship with the leadership group. And it wasn't often the entire leadership group. It was at the national level. It was at the high leadership level that these relationships were formed. And when you talk or you have an opportunity to hear someone who has been exchanging this money for support, very often you hear them say, well, yeah, we took money, but so what? We don't believe in that stuff. We don't want anybody to smoke. But the tobacco industry has never given money without expecting something in return. And it's that something in return that has harmed our community. Because what happens is that these relationships end up causing organizations that say that they care about Black health, they care about human rights, they care about making sure the kids get the best education, the best start. They say a lot of things that make a lot of good sense and that touch us. But in fact, these same individuals will keep policies from being enacted, either at the state level, local level. We definitely have seen it at the federal level. But we also know that they interfere with policies that occur within that organization. And so it might on the outside seem that these relationships aren't real, but they are there and the documents prove it. And I have published about it, listing just about all the organizations that were mentioned in the tobacco documents. So granted, this was information that had been documented in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, but we know even today that there are still interferences that are happening because those relationships between certain individuals who are highly respected and highly regarded and highly visible in the public face, behind the scenes, have relationships with people who are at some level, some decision level within tobacco companies that reflect on organizations not doing everything that they can do to share information about the harms of tobacco, to talk about how policies that they're not supporting would benefit African Americans and other people. They don't disclose their relationship with the tobacco companies. So when you have an individual that you have looked up to for decades, that you admire, that you wish that you could sit with at the table, who is not saying to you, I have a relationship with the tobacco companies, that's why I think doing anything around supporting policies that would benefit the Black community, I don't support them. And we can get into examples how we've heard in particular arguments about why we shouldn't ban menthol cigarettes, those arguments are reflective of what the tobacco companies want. They are not based on any evidence that exists, and they definitely are not beneficial. Their stance is not beneficial to the Black community.
And of course, this conversation is interesting because here, as we sit in the state of Kentucky, which historically has been a tobacco producer in terms of our agriculture, we're changing that model now because we have other industries that we are support and that have come to the forefront. But the fact still remains that big tobacco, in terms of industry and commercialization, they have targeted the African American community as early as the 1950s or even before. This is where tobacco companies have targeted Black neighborhoods with aggressive advertising using billboards, magazine ads, and hip-hop culture to promote menthol brands regardless of the harm that it causes. Also, historically, companies utilized free, targeted giveaways, often employing ice cream truck-style vans to distribute menthol cigarettes in urban Black communities to get people engaged and addicted to harmful tobacco, menthol, as a drug, even. And of course, with youth targeting, Black youth have the highest rates of menthol cigarette use, with research showing 56% of Black youth smokers using menthol between 2018 and 2020, and a higher recognition rate of menthol packaging compared to peers. And this, of course, comes from the Truth Initiative and some of our other allies in this work. Dr. Yeager, we definitely want to thank you so much for being here on The Ricochet Effect. This is Dr. Obini Elamine. Take care and be well. It's the Ricochet Effect. Ricochet Effect.